Here at RNIB Connect Radio, we do talk about many ways in which you can get involved with the RNIB and even maybe shape the future of the RNIB too. One way is through the regular Voice of the Customer focus groups. And I'm now joined here on Connect Radio by Ross Headley, who is one of the RNIB's research and insight team, and Hazel Kelly, who has taken part in a recent Voice of the Customer focus group. Hello, Hazel and Ross.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Firstly, Ross, would you be able to outline what the Voice of the Customer research programme is all about and how the focus groups fits in with all the research that the RNIB does around inclusion for blind and partially sighted people?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Toby. So during the first lockdown in 2020 and, you know, this unprecedented circumstances we all found ourselves in, we decided at RNIB we really needed to kind of step up our listening game and find a way to quickly understand the issues that mattered to blind and partially sighted people as things were changing on a weekly basis. So we launched this programme of research called Voice of the Customer, and it's been a really significant development in our approach to put the voice of blind and partially sighted people at the centre of what we do and help shape and direct our work on an ongoing basis. And it, you know, it was so successful, we decided, you know, we need to keep this and just make it the way that we do things. So I've been at RNIB about 10 years, and never before have RNIB listened with this degree of depth, reach and regularity. So we do a survey of around 400 blind and partially sighted people every quarter, every 3 months. We do these monthly focus groups, which you mentioned at the start, which allow us to kind of really get into detail and explore issues in depth with people. And thirdly, we also pay close attention to what people are talking about on our social media, you know, the things people are concerned about. And through those three mechanisms, we're able to stay, you know, really attuned to the issues that matter most to people with sight loss and then respond in a timely and appropriate way.
Before we talk about some of the key findings and the most recent research, I wanted to ask you, Hazel, why you wanted to get involved with the Voice of the Customer research focus groups and what you get personally out of being involved in the groups.
More or less because it was RNIB that kind of helped me when I was quite despairing after 2 years of quite quick sight loss and really didn't get much help anywhere. And it was by chance that I got involved with RNIB, and really basically that sent me on the way to recovering through all kinds of things. I went on a course that's called Living Well with Sight Loss. In those days, it was called Looking Forward. And RNIB put me in touch with all kinds of people, including counselling, which definitely helped me. So anything I can give back to help RNIB, to help other people, then I'm happy to be involved in that.
Ross, what are the key points from the most recent research, as I think it was focusing on the sight loss pathway and I think also e-scooters too?
Yeah, that's right. They were the two areas that we explored in the most recent round. So most of the listeners are probably familiar, but, you know, just in case. So the eye care pathway or the sight loss pathway is a term sometimes used to represent the patient journey from initially experiencing eye problems to receive an appropriate diagnosis, support and care. And we wanted to explore people's experiences of that. So what we found was that there's actually significant variation in people's experience of eye clinic care. While the vast majority of people are generally satisfied with the care they receive, a significant portion that we found aren't. And findings from our focus groups suggest that people are generally satisfied with the clinical care they receive, so that such as, you know, treatments and the medical side of things. But there are many elements of the process, so things like accessibility or referrals onto support services, and also personal impact. So, you know, empathy, the way news is broken, emotional support. You know, these are areas that are often cited as needing improvement. I'll just give a little bit more detail on those points. So a quarter of our survey respondents were dissatisfied with the information they receive about their eye condition and also referrals into support services, particularly around emotional support. We know that early emotional support is crucial. There's too many people with sight loss that are experiencing this lack of empathy when they're being diagnosed, and referrals into emotional support services only happen for 1 in 5 patients. We also found that some experience long waiting times or have difficulty booking appointments. And around half of those that we spoke to in our survey have experienced cancelled or reduced appointments due to the impact of COVID on hospitals. And we know it's going to take some time to clear that backlog. So the impact of that's going to be around for some time.
Hazel, what has your own personal experience been of the sight loss pathway?
Yes, I volunteered a while back and then somebody got in touch and said, would I care to be involved in this particular survey? And I think, if I remember rightly, it was four sessions of about an hour and a half, like one a week. And I wasn't sure what to expect, but the questions made you really think about it. And it was quite nice to be sharing it with a few other people. We're all on first name terms. You weren't giving away anything about who you were other than your first name. And the other people involved, and we could hear the other people's reactions to the questions, were from different parts of the UK. I am particularly in Scotland, Edinburgh. There was people in the south of England and somebody up north. There was four of us all together. And actually hearing what other people said and sharing with them was quite enlightening. In our particular group, we all had issues about the lack of proper further care after our clinical things had happened to us. So it was a bit cathartic as well for me just to actually look back and share with others again, because I maybe haven't fully done that totally. So I actually found it cathartic as well. So I would certainly recommend anybody else volunteer, because ultimately we are helping RNIB do research that would help people in the future too.
And I suppose people's experience of the sight loss pathway is very different around the country, because it, in some ways it is a little bit like a postcode lottery, isn't it?
Yes, it was actually quite interesting. The pathway or lack of pathway was different in different areas, but we all encountered, in our particular group, we all encountered that we didn't really get much aftercare or attention to how we felt or that our family could support us. As I said in the introduction, it wasn't really till I got involved with RNIB 2 years on that it made such a difference to me. And what was really quite shocking was the hospital I went to, and the floor underneath where my consultant, I was meeting him, he could have referred me to the ECLOS department, which is the eye clinic liaison officers, which were actually employed by RNIB to help people at that very time when they needed it. So I went for 2 years with no support whatsoever. And then it was by chance that I got involved with ECLOS girls, not even knowing who they were. Sorry, I'm being sexist saying ECLOS girls. It could be an ECLOS man as well. But they immediately sent me on this course, and really the rest is history as far as I'm concerned. It made such a difference to my life. So there's definitely a lack out there that they don't seem to realise. I did challenge my ophthalmologist about why he never sent me to those clinics. And he said, oh, well, people that come to me, I'm involved with a corneal condition and had to have two corneal transplants. He said, oh, people that come to me are not necessarily blind, but you don't have to be blind to still need support and help of what you're going through. And he just seemed to totally not realize that. So I did chastise him about that myself and said, maybe you could reconsider for future patients, you know.
Ross, in your survey, you were also asking people about their experiences of e-scooters. And I wondered, what were the main issues that people found around them when they were getting out and about?
Yeah, that's right. We didn't dedicate as much space to this as we did the eye care pathway. But what we found was that e-scooters are a significant concern for people with sight loss. Many people with sight loss who travel in areas where e-scooters operate said that they feel less confident on the streets now or even avoid those areas entirely. And their concerns stemmed from the use of those vehicles in pedestrian spaces, the speed they travel at, and also the lack of noise that makes them difficult to be aware of. And in that section, we also asked people about bicycles as well. And interestingly, they were actually of equal or greater concern for people with sight loss. So we think the issue is actually a broader one. And, you know, we need to understand how all users of pedestrianised spaces and the increase of these micro-mobility vehicles and how they impact the journeys of blind and partially sighted people.
What happens to all this research and the feedback from Hazel and others who have taken part in the focus groups? How does that sort of feedback into all the work that the RNIB does around inclusion for blind and partially sighted people?
So Hazel was involved in discussions around the iCare pathway, and what we learned from Hazel and from the rest of those participants in those groups will directly influence the way that we try and transform that iCare pathway and improve the experience of patients. So, you know, when we talk to the NHS and other service providers, we're going to be feeding in those pain points that Hazel's just spoken about and what other blind and partially sighted people have told us need to change. Previous conversations, focus group surveys have already been driving our work and our thinking. So just a couple of quick examples. At the start of this show, I mentioned the lockdown. And it was through talking to blind and partially sighted people in those early stages of the pandemic that we were able to make a case to retailers to provide priority shopping slots for blind and partially sighted people, and also to inform the campaigning that we did around some of the issues that blind and partially sighted people faced around social distancing. More recently, we've been speaking to people with sight loss about their experience with utility providers, so electricity and water suppliers. And those findings are informing conversations that we're having with those utility providers, which we expect to lead to a better service for their blind and partially sighted customers.
Hazel, has it been a good experience taking part in the Voice of a Customer focus groups? And would you recommend the groups to other blind and partially sighted people to get involved and help to make the changes that are needed?
Yes, Toby, without a doubt. As I said before, it was quite cathartic for me to discuss with others and share with others. And knowing that that research helps people in the future is definitely worthwhile being a volunteer to take part in these focus groups. And, you know, it's all very easy just on your phone or tablet or computer, just joining in for an hour and a half once a week over a short period is not too much to give of your time and your effort, I think. So I would definitely recommend it.
And it's also good in sort of feeding back, isn't it, and helping to make change, I suspect.
Well, yes, that's the whole point. It feeds back with RNIB that they can then help put pressure on NHS or the government or whomever to make things better for blind and partially sighted people. And I know I wasn't particularly supposed to talk about e-scooters and cycles, but I've actually been knocked down on a pedestrian pathway by a cyclist and ended up in hospital having a brain scan. Fortunately, didn't have bleeding on the brain, but that was a bit of a shock to me. And e-scooters fill me with dread. I do visit London quite a lot to visit family and have encountered them, and it's really not a good scene, not just for blind and partially sighted people, but for people generally and children and everything. It's so, I can't even believe they're considering making them legal.
Ross, how do other blind and partially sighted people find out about the research that you do and maybe get involved in Voice of the Customer focus groups in the future?
Yeah, so we want people to take part in our surveys every 3 months and also get involved in our monthly focus groups. And I want to extend my thanks from the team to Hazel for taking part in those focus groups and also for joining us today to share some of those experience to a wider audience. This next round of research, we've got a lot of important questions about elections and voting. You know, we're campaigning in response to a proposed elections bill, which could change the rights of blind and partially sighted voters. So we're really keen to get your views on that. And we're also going to be talking about people's experiences of services, society and travel. So if any of your listeners want to get involved in either the focus groups or the survey and help shape our work, they can do one of two things. They can call our helpline on 0303 123 9999, or they can email our involvement team on customervoice@rnib.org.uk.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Ross Headley and Hazel Kelly, for telling me more about the great work that is being done through the Voice of the Customer focus groups and for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thanks, Toby. Thanks, Hazel.
Thanks, Toby. Thanks, Ross.